That's what happens. I don't know why it's such. Okay, so let's just overview the story real quickly. Maybe that's too quick. Let's do the slides. Well, Menelaus, I just thought I'd throw this in so I could write off my trip to Greece. On page 234, Menelaus tells about how his return. So the whole thing is about the returning home, the cleverness of Achilles and the returning home. And he said they got to Cape Sunion, and his helmsman died, and the ship was blown off course to Crete, and so he spent a few years gathering wealth. So he's a very wealthy man as he sits there in Sparta with Helen. But it was a long trek to get back there. All right. If you go to Athens and you take a miserable bus trip about 30 miles down the coast, you are like absolutely appalled that the Greek coast is now just sprawl. I mean, villas, houses, everywhere. But they've sort of set this aside. And that's the Mediterranean. That's Homer's Mediterranean. And this is the typical Greek landscape, very rocky, very hard, you know, it's really sheep country. It's not White County, Indiana, with 6 feet of black earth there to plant stuff in, right? And on the Cape, there's the usual temple to a god. And anyway, that's that. That's the only picture. Let me follow these. What the heck? What should I? Let's go to page 245. Since I put these together last night, but I put them together and I forget them. Well, after Helen mixes, after she greets or recognizes Telemachus on page 244, she slips a little drug into everybody's drink to make them forget. Because they want to tell the old stories, but the old stories are like horrible, people dying all the time. So she's more of a good time girl here. And Homer's use of drugs is really fascinating to people. If you're a Star Trek fan, every Star Trek, I only saw one, but it was very Homeric. I was not a Trekkie. It was like 60s and people were popping pills, drugs. But it's very Homeric. Here they put this notion that you should forget. So she tells her story, and she tells her story about Odysseus's wiles. And this is page 245. He was so smart that one night he snuck into Troy. This Greek from out there in the ship, he put on a disguise and he snuck in, and nobody recognized him, but I recognized him. She recognized Odysseus in his disguise. She recognized his son. Clever girl, this Helen. Or she's good at recognition. Something going on with her, right? So, look at line 290, 282. See, he came in this disguise, and he was all filthy and rags. He was like a beggar that nobody would recognize him. And this is just how he sneaks back into Ithaca in book 12. Where he lands, and the suitors are getting news he may be coming, and they're going to kill him, so he disguises himself as a beggar to get close to them, and also to show us how bad they are, because they sort of throw rocks at this beggar, and so they deserve to die, and it sets up the final gunfight at the OK Corral, just quickly, where what he does is has his son set up a little challenge for the suitors, like, you can marry my mother if you can string that bow and shoot an arrow through like 12 axe heads. Right. And of course, none of them can string the bow, and Odysseus is dressed in rags. Well, give me that thing here, and I'll just use my 4,000 pounds of strength. puts it right there, and then they lock the doors and they kill the suitors in a big bloodbath. Okay. And then they kill all the maids who've been sleeping with the suitors. Okay, so they're disloyal. And this is the tough part about Homer. 20 years these girls have been working there, all right? treachery's treachery. They hang them. He hangs them, right? The brutality of the Homeric world is, you know, pretty intense. She tells, so she, Helen is telling the story of Odysseus is wild. She gives him a bath in line 282. This is one of many baths. And at 287, he said, once he'd cut a troop of Trojans down with his long bronze sword, back he went to his comrades filled with information. And all I can say is, it's not totally clear that Helen is telling the truth. She may be making up the story. And it fits the theme of everything Homer does. He always raises a little doubt. Okay. The whole middle of the book is Odysseus telling his host in the island of Scheria all his adventures. Well, there was this one time I killed the guy with one eye, you know, hung onto the sheep. That was, you know, we go, oh yeah? Guy with one eye? Right? Yeah, it was one eye. Let me tell you all about it. Right? And we just don't know whether it's true or not. But it's so far-fetched that there's no, and Odysseus is so clever that you get this notion that maybe he's lying, because then again you start to think that Homer's lying, but of course he's lying. He's telling his story. But he's sure making it sound good. Right? The last thing I guess I wanted to, where's the footnote for, oh yeah, the bottom of the page on 245. We need to talk about that. What were the causes of the Trojan War? Well, it was the kidnapping of Helen by Paris. And I said, the ancient historians actually took it back to many acts of ill will between the Asians and Europeans, right? So it's hard to focus blame. See, you could blame Paris, but some people say Paris was doing it to get revenge for some other insult, right? Now, one of the myths about why Paris got Helen is the judgment of Paris, and this shows up in Homer, but it's worth mentioning. It seems that there were three goddesses, Aphrodite, Hera, and Athena. These are the Greek names. We know them better by Latin names. Aphrodite is who? Venus. Hera would be Juno. And Athena, Minerva, good, something like that, actually, right? Well, the three goddesses decided they were bickering with each other and trying to figure out who was the most beautiful. And they said, well, we'll ask that little shepherd kid. At this point, Paris was working as a shepherd. He hadn't made it to warrior status yet, exactly like King David, by the way. First the harp and the sling and the rock and Goliath, but then later a fighter. And they get him to judge. They said, look, you choose. You choose which of us is most beautiful. And the story is that Venus bribed him, and so she won. Okay, but a lot of people like to interpret it allegorically. If you have your choice in the woman, a lover, a powerful woman, because she's queen of the gods, or a smart woman, which one did Paris choose? Well, he went for the love. Okay? I don't know. That's the job. And he gets rewarded. The other story is she just bribed him. So, you know, you choose me, I'll get you Helen. Okay? And so as his reward, he got Helen of Troy. So that's the mythic origin of the war in Troy. Okay. Well, I've been moving through. The first four books of the Odyssey are all about Telemachus. And here in this book, Menelaus tells the story about Odysseus in the Trojan horse. So we actually get a reference to it. Although, you don't, the story, Homer never tells the story of the Trojan horse. Virgil does that in his Aeneid. He tells the story of the old man in the sea, from whom he learned the whole point of the first four books, where Odysseus is. Remember? That's what Telemachus is doing. Homer keeps the story. That's the arc of the story. The unity is like frightening. He hasn't forgotten what it's all about, but we've been through so much. We've seen Helen. Everything fits. All right? And he tells him that Odysseus is with Calypso, the nymph. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, we're back on Ithaca, the nastiest suitor, Antinous, plots against Telemachus. Penelope finds out and gets very worried until Athena sends her a phantom dream in the form of her sister to ease her mind so she can go to sleep, so to calm down poor Penelope, who's worried about her son. So these people live in a world of constant anxiety, envy. They're like mice or something. You know, it's not a happy world that people live in. So that gets us to book five. And the Odyssey breaks down into these four unit bits. And 5, 6, 7, and 8 is the leaving of Calypso and getting to the island of Scheria, where Odysseus will tell a bunch of stories. Now, what's so fascinating about this, let me hurry it along, is that Calypso is willing to offer him immortality. And she's got this food called ambrosia. And all good students should know the difference between ambrosia and nectar, which I just learned the other day. I wouldn't know this myself. You eat ambrosia, but you drink nectar. Okay? The food of the gods. But this ambrosia seems to have immortality built in it, okay? So why doesn't Odysseus want it? See, this is not quite like Gilgamesh, who is dying for immortality. The man of many wiles has got it figured out. You know, there's something wrong with this immortality line. We're not meant to have it. And this is such a powerful thought that Odysseus... The Adventures of the Odyssey, people say, well, this must mean something pretty deep. And this thing's been interpreted like crazy. Right? And every major religion goes back to this. Right? This is big stuff. Not that it's in the story, but it's like the Old Testament. People start reading into it for its meaning. Why does he give up immortality? And it happens twice. This goddess of the sea... Well, he builds his own ship once the god comes down, tells Calypso, look, it's over, let the guy go. Odysseus builds a ship, goes to sea, but Poseidon's still angry at him. There's a big storm. Eventually he washes up on this island, which is near nothing. Okay? And he will be there for a while. During the storm, this goddess of the sea gives him the scarf of immortality to save him, but tells him to get rid of it once he's on land. There's something wrong with this immortality. And he's wary of it himself. He uses it, but then he lets it go. Okay. So somehow he's accepting of his limitations on Earth because he's smart. Not like Gilgamesh, dumb. Okay. Or Achilles, who just weeps all the time. All right. Well, book six... He washes up ashore, and the daughter of the king is named Alcinous, and he's got a daughter named Nausicaa. And in the scene that just freaks everybody out for thousands of years, what is the princess of the island doing when Odysseus washes up? He's hiding in a bush because he's lost all his clothes in the storm. This is the princess, and she's down there doing the family laundry. All right? A role model for us all. Okay, this is a world of servants, but she's making a game out of it. It's a way to get her out of the house, I think, much as anything. Anyway, we don't need to explain it. It's just what happens, and it's very charming. Well, what do you do when the princess is down there doing the laundry and you got no clothes? Now you got to be smart to get out of this one, otherwise, the provost is going to get you, and you're going to get a harassment suit. Okay, it's going to be all over. And he does it. He's the man of many wiles. And strangely, in this story, there's no sense that he's thinking, hey, man, if I can work this one right, this is the princess, the king, I got the island, I'm golden, right? He's not interested in her. I want to get back to Penelope. I want to go home. Okay? This intense longing for home is a bit of the fairy tale, right? But maybe it's the truth too. So anyway, he handles it. We have to rush along. Well, in the part you should read that I didn't assign because it's just too much, but while he's sitting with the king, 5, 6, 7, and 8, 4 units, just getting him. Oh, and they have some games, you know. He throws the discus to show off, you know. Little archery, rowing. Okay, book 8. He starts to tell his stories. 9, 10, 11, and 12, the stories Odysseus tells. And this is the heart of the Odyssey. And really worth reading, and the part that's most famous. And I try and show you what's going on here. These are all the adventures that he says happened to him between the fall of Troy and before he got to Calypso. Okay? He was trying to get home, but first I did this, and then this, and then this. I couldn't get home. You know, I think the god of the sea was angry, Poseidon. Right? But actually, he doesn't get angry till later. Well, the first thing he tells about is the massacre. On the way home, we were going in the ship, and we stopped at the island, and there were these people called the Cicones, and we killed them all. And then we went to see the lotus eaters, and we took these drugs and sort of lost our mind. And you're going, what? Forget the drugs. What did you do with the Cicones? We killed them all, and we took everything they had. And then we went to the, you know, got high. What? I mean, it's the brutal acceptance of the violence there, all right? And people say it's just the world of Homer, but I think it's the early, you know, as the earliest thing, it's like Gilgamesh. You're almost getting the story of the development of a man here from his early, perhaps, or you could read it that way, or I could force that into the story because I want to make this a moral story when everything's telling me it's not. All right. Well, anyway, he starts with that that notion. Then he gets to the lotus eaters. Then he gets to the cyclops, and that shows his cleverness because he has to have his guys hang on to the underbelly of the sheep and all that jazz. You get this in the cartoons. Book 10, he has to fight with the wind. He has to deal with cannibals. Then he gets this enchantress named Circe who turns his men into beasts. And everybody goes, you know, the women are going, so what's new here? Right? These guys are beasts. Then in book 11, his famous descent to hell. He's got to go, you sort of go down to hell to learn the truth about the world. And what's so fascinating is whether he actually goes down. It looks like he drinks some blood, and it may all be a vision. But it's a very powerful notion, this descent into the underworld. And we'll see it in Dante, of course, when he goes down to the Inferno. And the fact that he sees mainly women is really fascinating, too, because the whole poem is so strong, because it doesn't, you know, women are controlled by the social customs, but it's clearly you have very powerful personalities there, too. Well, finally, at 12, he goes back to Circe, and she teaches him how to get home. So he's gone from brutality to learning. So there's a vague education pattern here, which is enough for an allegorical reading. Teaches them how to get past the sirens. Tie yourself to the mast. Stop up your ears. You know this story? Vaguely, okay. Scylla and Charybdis. There's a whirlpool. There's rocks. How do you get through? Well, you better be careful. You know, right? And then it's the cattle of the sun. Don't mess with those. And, of course, his men do. They kill them, and that gets Poseidon angry, and that's one of the reasons he's stuck with... anyway, we want to interpret this stuff. Okay. So just quickly, the way people read this is as a journey through life. I'm not saying this is what Homer put into it, but all the medieval commentators, all the early Christian writers are reading this stuff. And this is a very powerful image for them. Okay. He starts with his lack of morality. He moves through the storm of the world. Okay, his mind is rattled, but that's, you know, it shows you reason isn't enough. There must be faith. There must be something to get you through. Okay, so what are the lessons, just quickly, that people drew out of this story, which again aren't necessarily there? This is a story about a guy gets home and kills the suitors. Patience. Be reasonable. The guy's a thinker, but reason isn't enough. The big one, perseverance. You don't give up. Okay. the goal you're looking for is not there. You're always chasing phantoms, false dreams, visions of women, that's the underworld. Okay? But there's some kind of truth to the homecoming. And of course, the Christian writers say, well, it's obvious what this is. He's not really coming home. The only true home is back to heaven. Okay? So your life, you know, Socrates used to say, I think your soul actually existed before you were born, and so you descend from heaven, you pass through the world, but eventually you're going back home after death. Now this is explicitly not a religious story, okay? But when the Hebrew Testament got translated into Greek in the 3rd century BC, okay, like Greek learning got merged with the Hebrew learning, and that's what's going on in St. Paul, right? He's starting to read the Hebrew stories in these Greek terms of a homecoming, right? There's no heaven, there's no hell in the Old Testament, but by the time they get done with it in the New Testament, there is. But the pattern was already there in the Greek literature, okay? So I told you about this. This is just the end of the story. He gets back to Ithaca, he strings his bow, that's the part I assigned, but then he slaughters the suitors and hangs the maidens, and goodbye. See you on Thursday. Now, the thing for Thursday is only 1,000 lines long, but it'll feel like 10,000. But do your best. look at the imagery of the fire, the torch being passed. And see if you, and ask yourself what it's like to live in Argos.